here studying the waterborne evacuation of Manhattan on 9/11, where anywhere from 300,000 to 500,000 people were evacuated from Manhattan by a volunteer, improvised, spontaneous fleet of every description of boat in New York Harbor, whether tugboats, dinner cruise boats, sightseeing vessels, with no pre-planning, with no training for this event. And over the course of about 10 hours, they managed to evacuate several hundred thousand people who had evacuated from the Twin Towers or from the other areas around Lower Manhattan.
And I think we see, what we see every year on TV around this time is that video of folks, scrambling down the street and running in panic and kind of looking back and then running and looking back and running, and sort of always comes across as it was pandemonium and it was just chaos. But when it comes to the way the rescue was organized via boat, it was kind of cobbled together and became fairly organized.
Well, that's actually quite interesting, because one of the things that we know about disasters is there is a lot of organization that occurs. So while it may seem like panic that people are running away and scrambling, when the buildings are coming down behind them and around them, that's a very logical response, right? And so even under those towers and within those towers, there was a lot of organization and coordination. It might seem chaotic, but at the same time, it's what happens after a disaster, that people begin to make sense of it, they begin to self-organize, they begin to draw on their plans, and in the case of these very large events, they also begin to improvise. What was so remarkable about the boat evacuation is that there was no plan in place for this to occur, and this was something where civilian boat operators, dinner cruise vessels, tugboats, came together in coordination, not under command of the Coast Guard or harbor pilots, but in coordination with them, to really self-organize in this particular way, drawing on their knowledge, drawing on their expertise of the harbor, of the vessels around them, and being able to really envision that there was a need and a way that they could help.
Over 100,000 people, how many boats were involved in this? And I guess they're coming from a lot of different areas, or is there one specific kind of area that the rescue was funneled in?
These boats came from all over New York Harbor. So some of them got underway from Staten Island, some of them from across the Hudson River in New Jersey, some from Brooklyn. So essentially, what had happened is that as the emergency unfolded and people were running from the ground zero area in all directions, the ones who ran to the south or to the west and ended up along the Battery Park seawall in Battery Park City, they were stuck at the water's edge. So a lot of the boats that were involved actually saw this happening because they were maneuvering in the harbor at that time, and they started to approach to make the first attempts at rescue. And then over time, the Coast Guard issued a call for all available boats to come to help out with the evacuation. And so from that, there were different counts that we have seen or that we've made ourselves, anywhere from 100 to possibly 130 boats of different types, of tugboats, dinner boats, sightseeing boats, some private craft, and others. And they worked over the course of about 10 hours, just making trip after trip after trip across the Hudson River or around to the east side of Manhattan. And then they started to bring supplies and first responders back from the other side. So they would take evacuees in one direction and then shuttle first responders and emergency supplies back in the other direction. And then as the evacuation eventually tapered off, there were several boats that stayed in service for several days, actually shuttling first responders and emergency equipment.
And it really was sort of a natural thing that started even before the Coast Guard called for it, that it was kind of a grassroots effort before it became an official thing?
Well, we have to remember that some of these ferries had just dropped off commuters. So initially what had happened is some of those boats had turned around knowing that they had just dropped off people they usually drop off on a daily basis to go and collect them. Other boats in the area were right there when the towers hit and began to respond. Others heard the call for all available boats, some other people asked permission. So they were already deploying, standing by, and then contacted the Coast Guard, wanting to make sure it was okay to approach. In the end, there was approximately 300,000 to 500,000 people who were evacuated. Some of the estimates initially were much higher than that. Based on our calculations and speaking with the different companies and really trying to figure out how long it takes to go back across particular points, that 300, 400, 500,000 number seemed quite reasonable.
And I guess a lot has been made in the last 15 years of kind of the human spirit, the American just kind of heroism that day kind of represented. And I guess this is sort of another example of that folks saw the need, were able to respond and decided to do so.
Well, it does, and without taking away from the efforts that people made on September 11th, this is a phenomenon that we have seen in disasters around the world. It is a very widespread, widely documented phenomenon that in the earliest stages of a disaster, it's the people on hand, the people locally, who often undertake the early rescue efforts, the early response and early recovery efforts, just because they're close to the disaster, they're most familiar with the affected area, and what we see is that people can act very resourcefully, they can self-organize themselves, and part of the key to disaster management from our perspective is how to understand how these kinds of grassroots and emergent efforts that really stem from civil society, how those can work alongside and in cooperation with more official and formalized emergency response systems.
If there's something I could add as well,
yeah,
that the way that I like to think about it, and Jim and I have talked about it, is that this event is very inspirational rather than focusing on heroism. Heroism sort of implies that there's something out of the ordinary and standoff about the particular event. And what we see from this is that people really have more capacity than they think. And that could be if they're a mariner, if they're a farmer, if they're an educator, or something else, that these mariners really looked for the ordinary in that extraordinary. They looked to what they knew. They looked to their familiarity with their environment. And because of that, they were able to really envision something, take this big, huge, complicated event and break it down into bite-sized chunks and begin working at it.
So like we see in the movies all the time, whenever a disaster happens, things devolve quickly into sort of anarchy. But you think maybe that's overstating the way that people respond and that people sort of take their part and kind of, at least in this situation, it shows that we as humans sort of tend more to do to help out than to sort of devolve into chaos, or is that making too big of a jump?
No, certainly a lot of what we see in films about disaster is an overstatement. So the mass panic, the kinds of antisocial behavior that is really portrayed in films is not the norm. Not to say that those things don't happen at isolated times.
Sure.
But certainly not the norm. A lot of what we do see in disaster movies, interestingly, is about local grassroots emergent efforts of people improvising. And that aspect is in fact true. That's what we have seen here in New York City. Or, if we look to the south and we look to the efforts of the Cajun Navy just a couple of weeks ago in the flooding in Louisiana. Again, that too was a kind of grassroots and emergent effort of people volunteering, of people taking the skills and resources that they had available, which was their knowledge of boating and their knowledge of the local area, and putting that to work.
Put it in a historical perspective, I guess, and I think I read something about this in the materials about your book, that this was the biggest sort of effort like this in U.S. history and world history?
In world history, as far as we're able to determine in terms of maritime or boat-lifted evacuations of people.
At the same time, there are other cases, like Jim had mentioned, the Cajun Navy that was in play and in providing assistance during the flooding around Baton Rouge. We saw the same thing after Hurricane Katrina. And we've seen other examples of boats coming and really responding in that capacity, and that could be the crash landing into the Hudson River with the U.S. Airways flight. We saw that after the shooting in Norway at the youth camp, where boaters nearby really went into very perilous circumstances to try to rescue people who were in the area, and we've seen that in other disasters as well.
So then, I guess, what is the lessons then that this teaches sort of disaster planners or emergency preparedness folks about how to plan for whatever may happen? What sort of information does this incident and your study of it provide to them?
First, it tells us that there is definitely a place for what we would call civil society, that is regular, non-official kinds of involvement in disasters. To us, it tells us also that it's extremely difficult for any single individual or any single agency to take control of a disaster. So we often see discussions after disasters that there were either failures of communication, or people just needed to get the big picture, or if there was just one single person in charge, we would be able to manage the disaster much more effectively. And you know, what we see from the boat evacuation is the difficulty of that. It's it's 20 miles from Sandy Hook, New Jersey, to Manhattan or Hoboken, which is where some of the evacuation was taking. So there would be no single person that would have, you know, a full grasp of everything that's happening over that wide an area. Instead, we saw different outgrowths of emergent and volunteer activity all around the harbor. So I think it teaches us that we have to think in terms of multiple kinds of pictures, not one single picture that defines the entire disaster.
Another key lesson is really this balance between planning and improvisation in these large-scale, very complex disaster or catastrophic events. That's not to say that planning isn't important and that improvisation certainly wouldn't be possible without having a great deal of consideration of plans. And you can't wing a disaster of that scale. You need to have thought about it. You can't improvise the whole thing. But the complicated aspect of it is just really the need to appreciate both, that you need to think about these questions ahead of time. You need to plan for them. But organizations need to be open to those opportunities that they might not have anticipated beforehand, but to build on those relationships that already exist, to take advantage of those relationships like we saw on 9/11 between the harbor pilots and the Coast Guard and these private vessels, and mobilize that in a way that is, again, not only productive but very inspiring.
And then finally, it seems like we've sort of squeezed a lot out of that day, and there's been so many stories and so many words and pictures that we've seen and over and over and over. But this seems like one of those things that has been an aspect of that day that's been not ignored, but maybe undercovered. Is that something you see and something you hope this book sort of shines a light on the actions of those folks driving those boats and the coordination that they were able to achieve?
Well, even 15 years later, when we tell this story outside of the harbor community, it's not uncommon for people to be surprised and say, you know, I never knew about that. I never heard about that. And I think that it's an important part of history to make its way into that larger story. There's been some wonderful coverage of this event over the years. For example, there was a short documentary narrated by Tom Hanks called Boatlift. There was a couple of exhibits on in New York City, but I think it's something that is a story that needs to really extend beyond the city itself, that there's much that the rest of the country can really learn from what happened there below the towers and at that water's edge.